welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. And hello, everyone. Today is a big day as we are sitting down with none other than Chef Leah Lira of Bramble House. Welcome, Chef Leah.
Thank you so much.
Now, if you live on Vashon, you've likely heard of Chef Leah and her restaurant, Bramble House. But for those of you who aren't familiar with Bramble House or Leah, Leah is a very talented and celebrated chef who, despite her young age, has built quite an incredible career, which includes being executive sous chef at Jean Georges in New York City, which at the time was a 3 Michelin star restaurant. Leah was also on the 3rd season of the TV show Top Chef, and also worked on Jean Georges' corporate team, traveling the world and opening restaurants in different locations around the world for Jean Georges. So welcome, Chef Leah. That's quite a resume.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I think my favorite part of the intro was saying at my young age, which I don't think is accurate anymore. It's nice of you.
You're definitely young. Definitely young. Leah, I'd love to start in the sort of the beginning. Where did you grow up and what were you like as a child?
Yeah, so I grew up with two separate households. So I grew up spending time between Tacoma and the island. One set of parents, we had a house on Maury Island over near the golf course. So I was here weekends and summers and spent a lot of time kind of running around outside and foraging and doing all those kind of like Vashon wild child things, which was great. We lived right on the water and we lived in this ravine. So we would go and pick berries and eat plums. And that's actually how I got the name for Bramble House, because blackberries to me are like such a integral part of Vashon life that it felt like just a real representation of the island to me.
I love that.
Yeah. But I loved it here. You know, I loved having just all of the rural aspects of the island, you know, having the freedom and the fact that, you know, unlike a city, kids really can kind of run around and get into trouble. And there's not really that much trouble to get into. You know, you can have a little more freedom than you can have with high traffic. Right.
Yeah, definitely.
So it was really great. That's kind of why it was exciting to come back. But I guess that's what Vashon was like when I was younger. And I always really loved kind of eating and cooking as a kid. My dad had a huge, huge garden. He still has one. He's this very kind of like lackadaisical gardener. he just puts stuff in and hopes that it grows. And normally it does. And so I grew up eating really great, you know, great fruits and vegetables from here on the island. So it's just a really bright memory from growing up here.
And were you experimenting yourself in the kitchen at that age?
Yes. You know, not so much here on the island. I didn't cook as much when I was younger. Mm-hmm. In my other household in Tacoma, we all cooked one night a week, starting from when I was really young. So I did love that. Like, I loved getting new cookbooks, and like, I got to, you know, my mom gave me a pita cookbook once, and I like learned how to make homemade pita. Whoa. And so it was really fun, like trying different things and kind of learning that combination of sort of science and magic of food, that these things magically happen. You know, you put this dough in the oven and it puffs up and you blanch tomatoes and the peel slides right off. You know, it was this really fun sort of like science experiment to learn how to cook all of these different things and why things worked a certain way.
There wasn't much of a restaurant scene on Vashon though when you were young, right?
No, I mean, when I was young, it probably was more than I realized. But for me, when I was young, the restaurant scene on Vashon was Sound Food. Which was very, very well known. I mean, I didn't know it really in its true heyday, but which I think was the 70s. But, you know, it was a very famous vegetarian restaurant when it first opened. And, you know, when you talk to some people that are here on island, it's what brought them to the island first. They came to the island to, like, eat at Sound Food, and it was great food and an amazing bakery. So that's my biggest memory of eating out on the islands.
Did you have an idea that maybe being a chef was in your future?
I think so. I mean, I thought of it as an option. I also really loved school. I really loved school and I really loved reading and writing. And, you know, that's what I ultimately ended up going to college for literature. So I guess I had a lot of different interests.
Yeah.
I think one of the most ridiculous facts about me choosing my education, because people ask me often if I've been to culinary school. I didn't go to culinary school. And I distinctly remember, you know, when you're a junior and you're like getting all your college applications, I remember I got some pamphlets from culinary schools and somehow, like, independent from my parents, they didn't offer, you know, I don't think I probably didn't ask them, but they didn't offer any guidance on it. But somehow mm-hmm. I independently just sort of decided it was impractical to go to cooking school, because I think I thought of it as just something I really loved to do. I didn't really think of it as a career.
It was too fun to be a career.
Yeah, yeah. And so instead I went to Evergreen for literature, which is really like paramount practicality, right? Like that you go straight into business right out of there. I don't really know what I was thinking, but yeah. So I like kind of was like, I don't know, like going to school for cooking, it's, you know, such an investment in something that's just kind of like a fun recreational thing. So I toyed with the idea, but I think it didn't feel like it was a career. And I think part of that is when I was growing up, or at least for my family, you know, in the 80s, early 90s, like we didn't really go out to eat that much. You know, you cook at home mm-hmm. and certainly on Vashon and in Tacoma, there just wasn't that much of a restaurant scene.
Right.
And so it wasn't a part of my life. The idea that like this is something that you can do professionally.
Yeah, I think times have changed, even just like with the rise of celebrity chefs. There really weren't that many celebrity chefs
when
we were growing up.
It's like Julia Child
exactly.
and Jacques Pepin. And yeah, yeah, it's so dramatically different now.
And so when you graduated college with your degree in literature, what did you do?
Yeah, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I also graduated young. I did this program in high school called International Baccalaureate. So I actually started school as a sophomore.
Oh, wow.
So I only went to college for 3 years. So I graduated and I was like just barely 21. And in my mind, I kind of thought the next step would be to go to graduate school and become a professor. That was sort of the track that I had in my mind. But I also felt like I was very young and I was trying to imagine like going to graduate school and being a TA to like class of 20-year-olds. And so I was trying to decide what to do. My sister had graduated recently from Cornell in New York, and she had just moved to the city. And, you know, this was when kind of industry was booming. And she was like, oh, come to New York. You know, anyone can get a job in New York. So I decided to take a little time and get older and then maybe like apply to graduate school in a couple of years. So I moved to New York and I really kind of didn't have a plan in mind. And so I started temping, and from temping, I got a job working for a trade show and event planning company, which was actually super fun. And so I did that for a while. And that was really fun because, you know, we had a show in Miami for like tours and cruises. And then we had a luxury travel expo in Vegas that we did every year. And I got to help with a real estate show in Berlin. So it was a cool job for a couple of years. But ultimately, it wasn't really what I wanted to do. And so I was trying to decide, is it time for me to apply to graduate school? Should I start working on this? Or the other thing I really loved was cooking. And when I was at Evergreen, I worked in a couple different restaurants to help pay for school. So I'd worked at a little local Italian place called Casamia that was really great. And then I worked at Olive Garden for about 2 years.
I love Olive Garden.
Cooking at Olive Garden. Listen, like, I don't have a bad thing to say about Olive Garden. Like, if you're getting fast food, which is essentially what it is, like, it's so well made. It's really clean. Like, they're so organized. Like, it's one of the best run kitchens. Yeah, so I'm in New York, and I'm like, nah, I don't know. I need to figure out what I want to do, and I'm thinking about applying to graduate school. I missed cooking. Cooking in New York is super intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And I hadn't gone to culinary school, so I didn't really have any contacts. But at that time, I happened to get a roommate who was a pastry chef, and I was talking to him about it. The place he was working at, they needed a prep cook, and he was like, yeah, listen, if you want, you could work here. You know, you don't make very much money. So I thought about it. It's like a massive pay cut. But I thought, okay, so I can apply to graduate school, go to school, which I would love, get my PhD, start teaching, figure out if I like it. And that would take about like 8 years, right?
To figure out if you like it.
Eight years and like thousands and thousands of dollars. And I was like, or it could take like 6 months and try to cook and I'll know whether or not I can make it. So I was like, okay, great. So I quit my job. I started cooking. It worked out. So I kept doing it.
And was it immediate? Like, were you super excited when you went to work? Or, because I mean, it's hard.
I was super excited. It's brutal. I mean, just physically, and I was young, but just physically getting used to standing, you know, for 12 hours a day just takes some getting used to. And also at that time, there was a lot less constraints on how people could make you work. So when I started that job, that was like the craziest job. When I started that job, I worked alternating 5 and 6 day weeks. And it was like 8 to 12 hours a day, depending on how much there was to do. And I got paid shift pay, which I don't think even exists anymore. But it was just like I got gross $300 a week. Gross. So It was not
in New York.
Yeah, in New York. It was not a lucrative time of my life. But after the first couple of weeks, you know, your body gets used to standing all day, and I got better and I got faster, and you know, I started learning more and I really loved it. I was only at that place for maybe like 4 months.
Okay.
And then through another contact, I ended up getting a job doing prep cook, but it was kind of like more advanced prep at the River Cafe, which is in Brooklyn right under the bridge, which is an amazing restaurant.
I've heard about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great restaurant. So I was really lucky to get the job there. And so I started learning a lot more. I started doing pastas and soups and, you know, helping with the saucier and doing sauces. And so that was a really exciting move for me. And then I ended up staying there about 2 years. That was a great, great experience for me and a great chef to work for, a huge mentor in my life. Still, I still keep in touch with him.
And was it at that point, since you had a mentor, you had a great restaurant you were working at that point, were you thinking like maybe I should go to culinary school, or was it you knew you were getting enough education?
I was. There? No, you're right. When I started working at the River Cafe, I was looking around me and the majority of people have degrees. The majority of people go to culinary school now. It's I think that's a huge shift that's happened. Almost everyone goes to culinary school.
Right.
And so I was thinking, is this something that I should do? You know, you can go at nights and on weekends and things like, well, not weekends, but on off days. And so I was sort of thinking, is this something I should do? And I talked to my chef about it, Brad. I talked to him about it, and he was like, well, you know, you could. The other thing you could do is just try to keep learning things. And so, you know, using him as a contact, I did stages in some other restaurants. I did stages at like Rick Moonen's restaurant in New York, and I was working 5 days at that point. So I would come in on my day off and I would work in the pastry department at the River Cafe for free. Like I would just come in and work so I could learn how to do all of these, you know, baking is such a technical skill. And so, you can't just sort of like get it by osmosis. You know, you can't just sort of like, you can sort of just like make lobster bisque by being explained it, but you can't make a sublet by someone kind of like rattling off the basic process, right? No. You have to have the right amounts. You have to have temps. You have to get everything right for it. So I started coming in and doing that. And, you know, obviously people love free work. And it was also a really exciting time for me. It's really exciting to get, you know, because depending on your point of view, and I think there's a lot of talk about this right now with labor and people being taken advantage of. And I respect that side of it. For me, it was really huge to get this education for free. Yeah. Obviously they got work for free, but it was a huge benefit for me because I was really motivated and excited to learn more. So, you know, I had this big door opened for me.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And yeah, it definitely shows that you must have loved it to go in on your off days.
Did.
A glutton for punishment.
I know. I mean, it's kind of like a theme throughout my career because, you know, when you want to learn more, you have to figure out how to do it. And sometimes, you know, you're lucky and you get paid to do it. And that's great. But, you know, when I started at Jean Georges, I had done I had this huge breadth of knowledge, but I had done almost no butchering because it just wasn't something that was ever part of my life. You know, normally you have a butcher or you have a chef that does that because it's, you know, it's an expensive product. Mm-hmm. People don't want you to mess it up. And it's also time consuming. So I did the same thing at Jean Georges. I would come in on my days off and learn butchery from, they have a couple of great butchers there who have been there for years and years. And so I would come and this poor guy, Eddie, who was like super busy doing all his work, would be like, okay, like show me how to break down the chicken the best way, how to butcher the squab, how to clean skate and all of those things. So, you know, there's different ways to learn how to do it. I think school is really great and I think it's really important. I think it teaches people a lot of terminology and technique. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also really important for networking. Culinary scene is like pretty small. And so I think a lot of times, it helps people as they move on in their careers, these relationships they've made in school. But there's nothing to compare with breaking down 60 chicken. You know what I mean? Like in school, you'll break down 4 maybe, you know, but like every day breaking down
the
20
pressure,
chicken
yeah.
is what's really going to make you good.
Yeah, you're learning in such a pressurized environment that it makes, you know, gives you a leg up.
It does. And I mean, what you were saying earlier, there's such a kind of cult of celebrity around being a chef now. And I think that's, in some ways, been really great for the industry, and it's brought a lot of people into it. But I also think cooking is really, at its core, it's really just blue-collar work. You know, it's a trade. You learn a trade, and now more people go to school for it, but you're still going into a job, and you're learning from the person that knows more than you, or you're learning from your chef or whoever's worked the station before you, and you just practice and practice until you get better. You know, to me, it's obviously there's a huge creative aspect to it, but it's a lot like carpentry or plumbing, or, you know, it's learning these techniques and learning these skills that people have done for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Right. And when did Jean-Georges, how did you get the Jean-Georges gig? And did you know it was such a big deal when you got it?
Oh, I knew it was a huge deal. Yeah, for me, it was a huge deal. I'd been to the restaurant once before and had this amazing experience there. And let's see, at that point, I'd been to the River Cafe for about 2 years. And I started as a prep cook, and then I kind of became more advanced, and then I started working on the line. And by the time I left there, I was in a position kind of called a tournante, so I could work all of the stations. So I filled in whenever, wherever I was needed, like a, you know.
Pinch hitter,
yeah. wherever I was needed is where I went, when people were on vacation or covering shifts and days off and things like that. So it was really great. And I kind of, you know, I'd been there 2 years, and so it felt like it was time to sort of think of what was next. Mm-hmm. And a really good friend of mine, one of my best friends, he had left the River Cafe maybe 8 months before, and he had met one of the co-chefs. Jean-Georges is the chef, but then they have executive chefs underneath him. At that point, there was like a co-chef, two guys. And he had met Greg, who was doing consulting with the restaurant. Is this story making sense? That Ryan was working at. And they were just chatting, and Greg was saying, oh, yeah, he was looking for some people. They were hiring for the line and things like that. And my friend Ryan knew this was, like, my goal. So working at Jean-Georges was sort of my goal. Like, I really wanted to cook eating there. So Ryan calls me, like, in the middle of day, in the middle of shift, and he's like, you have to, like, here's the guy's number. Call him. They're hiring right now. You should go there. You should call him. I was like, oh, okay. So, so I got in touch, and I went. You know, in restaurants, you do an interview, but you also normally do a trail, which means you basically you come in and you work for a couple hours because it's such like a different environment. Like all kitchens are a little different. So it's a good idea to it's like a two way interview. Like you get to see the kitchen, you get to see the food, you get to see what the crew is like and how you fit into it. And then they're doing the same thing for you. Right. They're seeing like how you fit in and how your knife skills are and how organized and how clean you are. And, you know, there's all these things that are being evaluated like in both directions.
I'm anxious just thinking about it.
I know. It's pretty intense. And especially like this one was very intense and I was so nervous. And but it just happened to be during when the Republican convention was in New York.
Oh, no way.
So like 80% of the city was just like, bye. It was so empty. So for all the time I worked at Jean-Georges, that's the quietest I'd ever seen it. So I was there and I was supposed to be trailing and they want to see you like make food and do things. But they were kind of like, well, there's not too much to do. So it was very laid back. And Greg, the chef, who I ended up working with for years, had actually been an intern for Brad, who is the chef at the River Cafe, who I was currently working for. So we kind of had this connection. And I did the trail and I did the interview and I ended up getting the job there. I started on the line. Jean-Georges is set up. So there's two side-by-side restaurants. There's Nuketine, which is the more casual, and then there's Jean-Georges, which is the Michelin-starred restaurant. And so everyone that starts there, you start as a cook down in Nuketine, and you kind of learn their style of, you know, how to behave in the kitchen and the style of cooking. And then after they feel like you've trained for long enough, which can vary dramatically, or when a spot opens, then people get moved upstairs to the Jean-Georges kitchen.
And how long did that process take you?
I was really lucky because, you know, there was shifting. So I moved pretty quickly. I mean, I also worked super hard. I also worked very hard.
Yeah, I was going to say.
To prove that I should be chosen. But it was a combination of things, you know, because you also need people to leave in order for there to be space to open up. But I moved upstairs in about 8 months.
Okay, wow.
So that's pretty, that was pretty great. So I started on the line in Nuketine. I was there for about 8 months. I moved up to Jean-Georges and I worked 4 different stations up in Jean-Georges for different amounts of time. And then about 8 months after that, I got promoted to the junior sous chef position. So that's the sous chef in the Jean-Georges kitchen at night. So I started doing that, which was very exciting.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
It's a very big deal. And sort of the way promotions work there, so I was that, and I was only that for a couple months, and then one of the sous chefs down in Nuketine left. So that's like, it sounds backwards, but that's the next promotion because in Nuketine, you're basically running your own kitchen. Mm-hmm. So up in Jean-Georges, you're just your support, you're helping plate, you're helping run the pass, you're covering vacations in the same, you know, you have to be able to work all the stations. And then, you know, when you go down to Nougatine, you're really running the kitchen. And one thing Schramm-Schorsch does is he has like a prefi menu in addition to the regular a la carte menu. And at that time, we were helping do development for that also. So you got to like get your own food on the menu. And so that was a really exciting move. Yeah. So I was down there, and then, you know, there was some more change. And so I got moved up and I was executive sous chef up in Schramm-Schorsch, which was very exciting, very big deal. And I liked it and it was great. But I'd had this goal to work at Schramm-Schorsch after eating there. And you know, I'd eaten at some different nice restaurants in the city. But Schramm-Schorsch was just the one that I connected with the most. I love the food. I love the style of service. And so this was kind of my, like, you know, everyone has their 5-year, your 10-year, whatever, right? Your goal. That was kind of my distant goal. But then after working there for about 2 years, right, I was executive sous chef. And I was like, well, I literally didn't have a plan after this. Like, I don't know what's next. I don't know what the next step is. This was like the thing that seemed sort of unachievable, or at least hard, you know, like it was going to be a battle to get there. And it was a ton of work. But it went more smoothly and quickly than I thought it would. So I was, you know, kind of 26 and thinking, okay, now I have to plan what it is that I think I want to do next, because I achieved the thing that I didn't know how I was going to achieve, which is a great feeling, but also a very stressful one, you know? It's like, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah. You race, then you're there and you're like, okay, what's the next move?
Hadn't
thought that far.
Yeah. I really hadn't thought about it. And so you brought this up earlier. That's when Top Chef ended up happening.
And how did that happen?
Well, it was sort of this confluence of things. Like, it wasn't something that I was very attracted to. I'm not like a huge like media person, you know? So I wasn't like, I want to be on TV. You know, that wasn't really a motivation. I was at this point, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I loved Schramm-Schorsch, but I kind of was like, you know, I'm in this great position, but I want to keep doing more and learning more and not staying in the same sort of place. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to decide what that next step was. And my sister calls me up and she's like, you should try out for Top Chef. And she was super excited about it. She wants me to be like Rachel Ray. And I was like, no, I don't want to be Rachel. Rachel Ray's great. I don't want to be Rachel Ray. And then at the same time, this was the third season of Top Chef. So they were really working on it. Like, the people that were that developed the show, they were working on it. And so they actually cold called restaurants all over the United States, high-end, well-known restaurants all over the United States, saying, hey, do you have people, do you have, you know, a sous chef or a chef that could try out, you know, not be on the show, but to have the interview and the screen test and all of that sort of stuff. So our GM at the time, John, was like, oh, yep. And like gave them my name and number.
No way.
Yeah. And email. And so they sent me all the information, and I had this, it's like a crazy, you know, 30-page thing you have to fill out and you set up appointment. And so I was like, oh, this is so funny. I call my sister and tell her about it. She's like, okay, well, now you have to do it. Because the benefit of being contacted in that way is that I could just set up an interview with them. I didn't have to do the cattle call. And I just didn't, like, I wasn't motivated enough to go wait in like a 3-hour line to be like, I'm cool, like, choose me. You know what I mean?
me.
Yeah. So this was sort of a way around it. So I was like, okay, yeah, let's see. I mean, I don't know what I want to do. I know I want to move on and do something else. Maybe this is like a good, you know, little break for me to figure out what happens next.
So, and your sister's excited about
it. My sister was super excited about it. So I went through that whole process. It's a big process getting on those shows. You know, you have to do interviews and screen tests and psychological evaluations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, they don't want, it's an interesting thing for me. It's a very high stress environment. So they want to make sure people, like, they worry about people that have like histories of, anorexia or depression or, you know, anything like that. They're looking into all these different things because they don't want anyone to obviously be harmed by being on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it was such an interesting question because I was like, do you, at the risk of sounding pompous. Like, do you think this show is going to be more stressful than like what we do every day? You know,
good point.
Like, this is a game. It's a game on TV. It's a game in front of people. So there's some weight there. But like, people come and pay money and have hugely high expectations. Like, to me, day-to-day life was way more stressful than this game.
Yeah.
A fun game, an interesting game where I met really cool people, but like a game, you know? So to me, it was this funny thing, like, oh, can you handle this stress?
Yeah, like, exactly. Well, this isn't The Bachelor.
Yeah.
And so when you got, did you just get a call one day and said, hey, we've selected you to be on the show?
Yeah, yeah. So you get chosen to be on the show. I mean, you know that they've narrowed you down, right? Because they narrow mm-hmm. it down to the candidates, and then you do a second set of interview with the producers, and that's when you get, like, the evaluation and all these different things to make sure that, you know, you're actually... it's possible. You're a good candidate. And then, yeah. And then they say, okay, we'll let you know in this much time. And these are the dates that we're going to film. And you can't tell anyone.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell like two people, but you're not really supposed to let anyone know. So obviously I had to let, you know, I let Sean Schorsch know, and I let, you know, a few people in my family, my parents and my sister know. And then made up a story about how I was going to Miami to help a friend open a restaurant to everyone else. Because you have to tell people something, like, oh, no, I'm just leaving work for 6 weeks,
yep.
You know.
A forced lie, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it, you know, it was really, it was fun. It's an interesting thing. It was cool meeting chefs from all over the country that I wouldn't have met otherwise.
Yeah.
So it was a fun thing to do.
Yeah. If anybody listening hasn't gone back and watched the early episodes, the early seasons of Top Chef, I think are my favorite. But in your season... I'd like to hear what your highlight is, but my highlight from watching you on Top Chef, which I believe is still on Hulu, was my favorite celebrity quasi-chef was Anthony Bourdain,
yeah.
And he liked your food. He came on as a guest judge.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's really cool. It's the chefs they get on there are genuine chefs,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I'm not a huge... reality TV person, but
yeah.
I like these shows that are genuinely like, I think it's people work really hard on those shows, you know,
right.
Like the chefs are genuinely coming, they're making food, like you genuinely have half an hour to try to come up with a dish or 2 days to feed 60 people or whatever, you know, so it really is showing, you know, skill and creativity and coordination. Like people are working really hard. Obviously they make things a little more dramatic and, you know, they try to ask leading questions to get people angry at other people to make it better TV. But they don't make something that's not there. You know,
yeah.
There's nothing fabricated on it. There's nothing scripted on it. It's really, you know, everyone interacting and trying to make the best food they can.
Yeah. Under high stress, but
yes.
You all were used to high stress.
Yeah.
And when that aired, did it kind of like change your life?
So I guess it changed my life just in that random people would recognize me,
yeah,
you know, and feel excited about it, you know, and so that part was really kind of interesting and bizarre. I came to visit my family and I was walking around Pike Place with like my nephew strapped on in like a baby carrier, and this woman came up to me in Pike Place and was like, oh my God. And that was like a year later, you know.
Wow.
So I think it's kind of cool the impact it has on people, but that was really the biggest thing, because I just went back to Sean Schorsch and I kept working, and at that point I was, you know, I was looking at all the different cuisines I'd cooked and different ingredients I was familiar with. And I was really interested in Mexican cooking and, South American cooking, really. You know, Peru and Mexico, which I know are dramatically far apart from each other. But I was really interested in that. And I was thinking, is there a way I could work, you know, get a job, you know, at a hotel or something, because they'll help with visas and all of that sort of thing, and get exposure to this cuisine that I really have, and ingredients that I have really no information about, you know,
right.
No knowledge of. And when I got back, Sean George and I were chatting during service one day, and he was telling me he had just gotten back also on a trip to Mexico City, because they were looking at a hotel, you know, Four Seasons that was getting built, and they were going to put a restaurant there, and they'd gone and they'd visited all these markets and different restaurants, and he was just telling me all about it. And I said, you know, I want to be the chef there. And he said, really? And I said, yeah, like I want to move somewhere, you know, Mexico or Central or South America. Like that's what I want to do next. I'm looking for something new to do. If you want me to do this, like I'm really interested. And he was like, oh,
wow.
Okay. So then
way to seize the moment.
I know. Well, yeah. So, So that's sort of how I ended up joining the corporate team. I didn't join it to be a culinary trainer. I joined it because I was going to become the chef of this restaurant. It was supposed to open in 2007. In the interim, I joined the corporate team because it was under construction and these things take a long time and you never know when they're going to open and how it's going to go. So so I started doing training at our different restaurants. And
so Mexico City, did you move there?
Well, no, not to Mexico City. So, you know, the magic of building hotels and building restaurants is that things don't go as expected. Mexico City was actually, I think, supposed to be the first restaurant this corporate group opened that I joined. And it ended up opening in 2012.
Wow.
So, with a different chef who's great.
Who 5 years later.
He's great. He's not there anymore. But so I did end up doing that opening. I was culinary director of this corporate team. So
okay.
I opened as director, but no, not as the chef. So I ended up, you know, it kept getting delayed and delayed. And I kept doing all these different openings and I really loved it. And there was this part of me that thought, this is so amazing. I used to think I either want to cook or I want to be a teacher. And somehow I found this position where I really was teaching about the cooking, but also opening food and creating the right environment and planning schedules and, you know, all of this sort of thing. So it was really, I felt very lucky to have found this position that hit on these two things that I really love.
And it would serve you well again here on Vashon.
Yes, for opening my own, which is for sure a whole different animal. It's huge that I had that experience and seeing all of these restaurants built and being involved in all the aspects of it, not being in charge,
right?
You know, and not being the decision maker for huge swaths of what was being decided, but getting to see that process.
And on that note, were you still doing the corporate team job with Jean George when you started to get the inkling that it was time to move on and start your own restaurant?
No. So I was doing the corporate job and I loved it and I was traveling a ton, but it's really a very intense lifestyle. And so I was trying to kind of decide if I wanted to keep doing it or do something else. I was traveling like 250 days out of the year. I was also starting a serious relationship, relationship. And we were engaged and my husband is from Mexico and was living in Mexico at that point. And I thought, well, I always wanted to live in Mexico and try to learn more. And so we decided that when we got married, I would move down and join him in Mexico and we'd live in Mexico for a couple of years. So we ended up living there almost 2 years. While I was in Mexico, I did consulting work with the corporate team, but also just kind of was very fortunate to get to travel somewhat around Mexico and experience some of the really hyper regional cuisines and the chilies that only grow in Oaxaca and, you know, these beautiful aspects of the food of Mexico.
Did you think, oh, well, actually, maybe we could just stay here in Mexico, or was it always meant to be temporary?
I think maybe in some part of my mind, I thought, what would this be like?
Mm-hmm.
Mexico is complicated in a lot of ways that I don't think I would want to try to have a business in. And I always just love the idea of coming back to the Pacific Northwest. I really like it here. And, you know, I'd lived very, very far away from my family for a long time.
Yeah.
And so kind of like the idea of being closer to them again. So that was sort of always our goal.
When you moved back here, was Bramble House already sort of a concept that you were just going to start diving in and making it a reality, your own restaurant? Or did you move here first and kind of like let the dust settle and then start working on a restaurant?
No. Like 0%. I had no plan of opening a restaurant. So I came back and I actually had a job as culinary director at Sugar Mountain, which is a great company here in Seattle. They have Beecher's Cheese Mishima, and they have four different restaurants at that time. Cafes, and they do all sorts of things. They have a great foundation that teaches kids about nutrition. And so I was culinary director for that company. So I did that for about a year. And that was when I really started thinking like, well, you know, I was over here, you know, here on the island visiting my parents and thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe it's time to start thinking about opening my own place. And my father is very entrepreneurial and very much believes in like being your own boss and having your own business. So he was very encouraging. It's helpful to have someone help you make that first step. Well, we started looking at properties here on island, and I actually looked at the Sound Food space.
Now
it's Mike's, and he does all the, you know,
estate sales.
Yeah. It's such a cool building, and I had so many great memories of going there when I was younger. And so I had sort of this dream in my head about how it could be this like little magical place, but it just, it needed a lot of work to be a restaurant. The day that, you know, my dad was helping me, he knows a lot about real estate. And so he was doing all this sort of research into it. And the day that we kind of realized, okay, this is not a good place for the sort of restaurant I want to have, for the amount of seats I want to be able to have, he had heard from Dick Bianchi that the building that Bramble House is now in was coming onto the market. And, you know, Dick knew that we were looking, and he said, do you want to, you know, go and look at it? And my dad tells me, he's like, you know, I don't know. It's a house. It might not be the right fit, but, you know, you're here on the island. You want to come and look at it? And I said, okay, let's go look at it. And it's such a great location, right? It's
walking distance from, the center town.
Yeah. And so we pulled up, and I thought, oh, this is cute. You know, it's a cute old house. And we walked in, and I just thought, oh, no, this would be a perfect restaurant. Like, I really, like, walked in the door and thought, oh, no, this, like, we need to open this wall, and we need to put in a door, and we need to do this and that. But, like, this could really be a restaurant. And my dad was sort of shocked, because he thought, you know, he was just trying to, like, cheer me up from being blue about, like, you know, Sound Food wasn't going to work. Well, there's other options. We'll find other options. But I really, I just loved it. I loved the house, and I loved the space. And, you know, there's certainly some challenges in being in an old house like that. And there was a ton of work to do. But it felt like a really perfect space.
It is magical, I think, even though it's not Sound Food, you know, it has that sort of, it's like a storybook looking house, and you walk in and it's just so homey, but yet you feel like you're at a special restaurant. It's funny because when I saw it being built, I couldn't necessarily imagine. I was like, that's an interesting choice for a restaurant. But when the minute you walk in, you know, it just works. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I was lucky with sort of, you know, the bones of the house and even the floor. You know, the floor is all original from when it was built in 1942. Yeah. It needed a lot of work, but a lot of that is still just, you know, the original wood, which I love. Like, I love kind of being a part of that history. You know, the house, people have a lot of memory. I have memories of going to that building. It used to be Old Dreams, which was a antique kind of consignment store. And I remember going there with my grandmother. She loved, you know, antiquing. And so I have memories from when I was younger, and people come in and they used to, you know, go to the salon upstairs, or they got their taxes done there. I mean, a ton of people feel really connected to the building because it was a wine shop that people really loved for 2 years. So it's fun being a new iteration in a building that has so much history here on the island.
Restaurants are notorious for being really tough to get off the ground. There's some stats about the percentages of restaurants that don't make it past that first year. Yeah. And then you add on top of it being on Vashon, so an island. What was that first year like? And were you really nervous about it? Or,
yeah, I mean, restaurants are really, like, fundamentally bad businesses. Like, no one. This is a PSA. No one should open a business. No one should open a restaurant. It's a bad idea. It's one of those things that you do it because you happen to really love it. I was really nervous about opening. You know, it's hard because we do have a really small population. It can be hard to find labor here on the island.
Oh, yeah.
It can be hard to find people that can work, and public transportation isn't great. So, you know, people have to be able to have cars because we close late. We close later than buses run. You know, there's so many factors, even just getting products. I mean, in the amount of time we've been open, June 1st will be 3 years. So in the amount of time that we've been open, it's already gotten better with more companies delivering to the island. But that's a huge factor, too. You know, every week I go into the city and buy the things that, like, I can't get delivered to me. So there's restaurants are always a million little moving parts. And then taking that and putting it on the island makes it, you know, a whole new level of coordination and planning. So it is a commitment in that way. But I also think the island deserves good restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a big community here. There's a lot of people that love food and care about food and where it comes from and how it's made. And so I think it's great that the restaurant culture here on the island is really growing and changing. This is the most restaurants we've ever had. And we have even more great restaurants that are going to be opening soon. And I think the more we create that culture here on the island, the more it's going to sort of support all of us. You know, we reach this force where people know there's great restaurants they can come to in town. We're going to be open when we say we're going to be open, which is something that, like, maybe historically Vashon hasn't been really good at. You know, we've been a little more laid back about things like that. So Vashon has been a place where there's people that support local business and support local farms and cook great meals at home. Like, that's how mm-hmm. I grew up. It was really rare that we would go out to eat here on island. And granted, there were less options, but there were options. And now I think that's changing a little bit, that people like to realize that, you know, if they're just worn out and they're on their way home from the ferry and they don't want to have to cook, or they have a special occasion, they don't have to go off island. They can, right. you know, come to one of our restaurants and have an equally special and unique experience that they would get by going to a great restaurant in Seattle or Tacoma.
It's great to have Bramble House, to have that sort of special feeling on island when people come to visit, or when tourists come to visit from.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a lot of debate here on island about tourism. There's mm-hmm. mixed feelings yep. about, you know, people coming and really changing the feeling of the island and making it hard for people that live here at certain times. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think business is a reality of life anywhere. And the reason that we can have all the great businesses we have here on island, not just restaurants, but also like some of the gorgeous little retail places we have, is because we're supported both by the island and by tourists that come, because Vashon as a whole has worked so hard to maintain its identity
yeah.
In a way that some other places maybe haven't been so successful. And I think that's what's so great about the island, is that Vashon continues to be really clear about its message, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and keeping that identity. And I think, you know, what I wanted to do with Bramble House, and I think what a lot of us sort of younger group of people opening businesses now are trying to do, is show how much we love Vashon and
right.
open up something in that, a modern version of that image, I think.
Sort of celebrating what Vashon has to offer. And on that note, would you mind explaining for anybody who hasn't been to Bramble House, like, what type of food you serve at Bramble House?
Sure. Yeah. I don't know really what to call it. So I call it modern American, because it's so vague that it sort of means I can do whatever I want. So that's my identifier for the restaurant. It's modern American.
Cool.
Which confuses people sometimes, because they ask me, oh, so like burgers and meatloaf? And I'm like, no, not that kind of American. You know, I've traveled so much for work, and I've had exposure to all these different markets and spices and ingredients that they've all really influenced how I cook. So I love combining what I can get locally with this food that I really love just from my life and things that I've eaten in the past. So I think it's really a marriage between sort of the Pacific Northwest bounty that everyone knows so well, and all of these influences that we're lucky enough to be able to get now. You know, I mean, I think one of the wonderful things about the huge immigrant population that we have in the United States is that they've brought all of these amazing foods with them. And so we have access to them in a way that, again, like when I was young and growing up, I remember once my mom and I tried to find like dried porcinis, and it was like the holy grail. Like, it was so hard to find the, you know, this crazy specialty ingredient, you know, and now it's absurd to think it would be hard to find something like that. You know, we can find really, you know, specialty Moroccan spices and preserved lemons and, you know, 1,000 different kinds of kimchi, you know, like the bounty that we have to experience different cultures, I think, is really amazing. And I love being able to include that in the food. So that's a really non-specific answer to your question, but I think that's where I start from. And I want yeah. people to come in, and I want them to look at the menu, and I want things to sound appealing and good, of course. I like an ingredient here and there that they don't really know what it is, so they get to try something new and experience something new. I think that's the magic of eating out. I mean, if I just make what you can make at home, then you would just make it at home. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, I want to make something that is something you wouldn't make for yourself, or something you haven't experienced before. So that's what I try to do with the menu. I change it pretty frequently. I don't change mm-hmm. it quarterly. I sort of change it as new things become available, or, you know, we get bored of something, or or it's just time to change with the weather. So right now there's a whole bunch of new menu items because we're getting into spring. I actually did my first, like, big farm pickup today, which was super exciting, from an island farm. So now I'm getting, you know, local green, local spinach and salad mix and sorrel and wild chives and nettles grown here on island or on the new scallop dish. So I try to keep the menu really wide, so there's something sort of appealing to everyone. I always want to have great seafood, you know,
because
I just love it and I love cooking it. I try to have like one really good steak for people on the island. And then I just personally love making pasta. So we always have like the raviolo is something I've had almost the whole time we've been open. And then I tend to have different pastas because I like making it and I yeah. like eating it. So it's something I always want to be on there.
Yeah, that raviolo. And also a tip for anybody who heads over to Bramble House after hearing this is I always like to see what the salad option is, because I think that's one of the options that changes almost every time I'm there. It seems like there's something new, and it really seems to celebrate whatever's in season. So it yeah. changes a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, actually, the salad I think is changing again this Friday.
Okay.
Because now I'm getting these salad greens yeah. and like favas are coming into season. It's like, this is an exciting moment. Like, chefs get real pumped when, you know, because all of a sudden, okay, it's not just like potatoes and squash and beets. We're getting all of these beautiful things. So,
well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for stopping by and chatting with us today.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we, here on Inspired Island, we've been ending every episode with fun quickfire questions. Well, the first one is, do you have a favorite beverage here on Vashon?
I really like Nashi cider. They do cider and peri. I really like their Hosui.
Hosui.
It's peri. It's so good. It's like really tannic and bright. I really like that.
And if you're not at home or work, which it sounds like you're at work quite a bit, where can people most often find you on the island? Like, do you have any favorite haunts?
I'm not out a lot, mm-hmm. honestly. It's sort of embarrassing. I probably am like at my parents' house. I'm not very exciting right now. I also really like going to Shingle Mill Creek, that trail. That's one of my favorite trails because I like going down to the salt flats there and just so like peaceful looking out at the water.
And do you have any pet peeves about island living?
I mean, probably 1,000, mm-hmm. right? Because we have pet peeves no matter where we go. I wish things were open later.
And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
I mean, I don't know if we can call this a tradition. I love blackberry picking. I mean, that's not like an actual island, coordinated island tradition, but it's something that I have so many memories of. And there's just something about like being out in the sun and picking a bunch of blackberries and getting destroyed by all the thorns, because there's no way you ever get out of it unscathed.
No. Your hands are all
your
blue.
Your hands are all stained. Yeah. But like going blackberry picking, and my mom makes crazy good cobbler. And so like just that sort of sequence of events of like having that free time in summer and getting all of these berries that are just growing up. Like, there's such a bounty here that it's just like growing on the side of the road. You know, you don't have to go to the store. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to even grow it. It's just magically appearing. And then, you know, getting this, I have such a sweet tooth. So like getting this like amazing dessert out of it. Like, it's just such a kind of a perfect day, perfect sort of Vashon thing.
Yes. Quintessential.
Yeah.
And lastly, where can people find you to learn more about you and your work?
Oh, well, you know, you can stop by the north end of town. but I'm online. We have a website. It's Bramble Vashon.
Bramble Vashon.
Yeah. No house in the website. Or I'm not so good at most of the social medias, but I love Instagram. So on Instagram, we're Bramble Vashon.
Yes, I follow that. It's a great account.
Yeah, so that's a fun one to check out. And I put, you know, whenever we have events coming up or new food or a new wine or something like that's there. If you want to see, you know, random thoughts of mine, I'm there as Chef_Leah.
Well, thank you so much, Chef Leah, for stopping by. And thank you all for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 FM LP. Until next time, stay inspired.